A large abandoned building sits at the southern edge of Seattle's International District. You may have noticed it. It's surrounded by arterials, and if you had to guess, you'd probably think it was an old elementary school. There's nothing in the red bricks and tall windows to indicate the complicated history just inside. This was a processing center for immigrants from 1931 to 1999. Known to some as Seattle's Ellis Island, this immigration station offered a first glimpse of America to many of our region's new arrivals. In the first segment of our series, Between Worlds Behind Bars, Sarah Studeville takes us inside the former detention center on Airport Way and explores a dark corner of our city's past.
The Pacific Northwest first attracted Chinese immigrants with the lure of gold in the 1850s. The late 1800s saw an influx of Chinese laborers that helped build the state's railroads and worked in the region's growing industries. Many of these new immigrants passed through immigration stations, first in Port Townsend, and then as Seattle grew, in a center above the Pike Place Market.
The U.S. needed the labor to build the city.
Cassie Chin is an historian at the Wing Luke Asian Art Museum. Her family immigrated to Washington in the early 1900s.
So, for instance, the Ship Canal was dug by Chinese laborers. Bricks for the roads paved by Chinese laborers. So there was a huge need, especially after the Seattle fire, a huge need for labor to rebuild.
But the boom times didn't last. And as the economy suffered, so did immigrants who were seen as a threat to jobs. Chinese immigrants were specifically targeted, and anti-immigration laws that spanned the early 20th century stemmed the flow of new arrivals from China. Despite these restrictions, people found ways around the laws.
If you were a citizen and you traveled back to China, and let's say you got married, you had a family, then your children would be citizens of the U.S., and so that they could then come and immigrate here as U.S. citizens.
This sounds simple, but it wasn't. Some people faked documents that claimed they were the children of U.S. citizens. These people became known as paper sons. But other immigrants with legitimate family ties, even children, were held under suspicion in immigrant processing centers.
They would be held in detention indefinitely then. They would be interrogated, and oftentimes these were young kids, 12, 13, traveling by their own. And they would be interrogated to prove that they were who they said.
A new, larger facility on Airport Way was built in 1931 to deal with these immigrants. But as time progressed, it saw many uses. In the days after Pearl Harbor was bombed, leaders from the Japanese-American community throughout Washington state were rounded up and questioned here. In the following months, these men and their families were sent to internment camps as far away as Idaho. In the 1960s and 70s, the majority of people passing through here were Mexican and Central Americans. Many were held on immigration violations. And by the last decade of the center's use, it had become less a place of arrival and more often a final destination before deportation. The center closed in 1999.
I think the place is full of ghosts. It's full of ghosts of a lot of people where there was no hope at all.
Jay Stanzel is an assistant federal public defender. He spent years defending immigrants and refugees. He started taking on cases defending people in the Airport Way Detention Center in the 1980s when he was a young law student for a legal services nonprofit.
I spent a lot of time talking to people and just say, holding their hand, crying with them, saying, there's no hope. That's what the law says, there's no hope.
He's visiting the abandoned detention center with his old client Manny, who he met here in the 1990s.
Is there a stairway going down?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is where I spend the most time writing to newspapers and friends and families and writing kind of like my own brief and stuff is here.
Manny Uch is a 33-year-old Cambodian American. He was among one of the last groups to live within these walls. The furniture is all gone, but there are eerie remains. A lone shoe on the floor of the laundry room, a cafeteria tray in the abandoned mess hall. There's even a small laminated sign someone posted that reads, "Welcome to America," above a clip art American flag. This is Manny's first time back since the building closed, and he walks slowly through the echoing cement halls, peering out of the grated windows of the large tiled cells, pausing in the basement processing room surrounded by a chain link fence.
So this room would be full, packed of people waiting through the process, and sometimes they would have children here too because they didn't know where to put them. So
Manny's family brought him to Seattle from Cambodia 25 years ago. He grew up in White Center, a poor neighborhood outside the Seattle city limits that struggled with crime and gangs in the 1980s and 90s. As a child, Manny was a permanent resident, but never became a U.S. citizen. a distinction that didn't matter much to him until he ended up in trouble. He was arrested at 18 for driving the getaway car during a robbery and sentenced to 55 months in jail. But under new laws passed in 1996, Manny's crime became a deportable offense. And on the day he finished his jail time, he was taken directly to Airport Way to await deportation. Jay was Manny's lawyer.
In 99, we started representing Manny and a bunch of other fellows who'd been indefinitely detained in this, among other facilities.
They were going to send him back to Cambodia, the country he left when he was 8. But Cambodia wouldn't take him, and Manny was held here indefinitely. A series of cases has since ruled that indefinite detention, even for detainees with deportation orders, is unlawful. But at the time, it meant that Manny spent 6 months in Airport Way, and he got to know it well.
So you stayed in this room?
I stayed in this once. So you can see people walk by going inside, and the window would be open because it gets so hot. You have to open the window, and so we would make conversation with people that is outside.
The cells that Manny stayed in were right above the street, about 30 feet from the open sidewalk below. Manny says he and his fellow inmates often sought ways to interact with people walking by.
Like, hey, we're up here, you know, trying to strike a conversation, you know, like good-looking girls or something, and you're like, hey, we're up here, what's up, you know, what's your name, and, you know, it's boring, you know, so that's what we do.
So did anybody ever talk back? I mean, when you...
Yeah, they do, they make conversation, yeah. And sometimes you can have friends over. You know, you can call your friend and say, hey, come to the window, and they talk for 5-10 minutes until the guards say, hey, you can't do that.
Many people Manny met within these walls struggled between the boredom of their confinement and the uncertainty of their futures. And for some of them, there was no encouragement to be had. There were 2 suicide attempts during the 6 months that Manny stayed here.
One is hanging, you know, the sheets, strangled himself. Razor, yeah.
I asked Manny why he thought they did it.
I think to them there's no way out, you know, I mean, and they have no choice.
And the place does seem haunted. There are worn painted yellow footprints on the pocked cement floor for detainees to follow when they were being moved. Steel solitary confinement cells gape open into the halls, and the yard, a fenced-in rooftop, is scrawled with graffiti. Testimonies and melted rooftop tar of the names, dates, and countries of those who passed through here. For Manny and Jay, it's an emotional return, and before they leave, there's an awkward hug in the empty visitors' room where Manny once spoke to his mother through the thick plastic window.
Good job. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Manny was released from detention in 1998. He now has a 3-year-old daughter, drives a delivery truck, and works as a community activist on issues of deportation and immigration. He still lives with a deportation order, but is hopeful that a request to Governor Gregoire for a pardon may be granted this year. For Jay, it's good to visit the center on Airport Way one last time.
I'd say it's good to see it dismantled. I hope the whole system is dismantled someday and we can just live on the planet as brothers and sisters, like I think we were meant to begin with.
Plans to convert the building on Airport Way to office space begin early next year. But the closing of the center did not mean the end of immigration detention centers in the Puget Sound area. A new, much larger facility below downtown Tacoma opened in 2004, and with it, the beginning of a new chapter in the history of immigration in our region. I'm Sarah Studeville for KUOW.
Funding for our series, Between Worlds, Behind Bars, was provided by the KUOW Program Venture Fund. Contributors include Paul and Lori Ahern and Puget Sound Energy. Tomorrow, we visit an immigration detention center in Tacoma and explore the growing controversy over immigration detention in our region. And I told you to be patient.